Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Y'all ready for this?
Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. The website is Illegal Curve, www.illegalcurve.com. And in case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Important roster note, in order to activate Ben Maxwell, the team has placed Ron Hainsey on the IR, expected to be out in another couple weeks or 10 days or so. Let's talk about Blake Wheeler. Big guy. You know, what is he, 6'4"?
Yeah, he's a big boy.
He's 6'5", but yeah.
Big boy. Big body. You know, look, when he gets going in open ice, he looks like a truck coming down the ice. Yet he seems like he plays a bit of a soft game. You know, what's his style of play? Is he still trying to find, you know, how he's going to be known in the NHL? What's going on with him in terms of his... You can see the frustration growing and thinking his face over his slow start as well.
Yeah, he slammed that stick on the glass.
That's right, in Ottawa.
At the end of the game there. He's had opportunities. He's created scoring chances, actually. Maybe Ladd's had better total opportunity or better quality opportunities, but I think Wheeler's probably created the most opportunities on that line. Little's been fairly invisible for the majority of the season. You know what, Drew, it's a question of, you know, he is what he is, I think, is at the end of the day, and it sounds, you know, it's cliche, but, you know, Rick Dudley acquired him last year in the Mark Stewart-Peverly deal, and he's not the most physical player. One of the reasons why he's available, big body's not as physical, and he couldn't fit into the top two lines in Boston, or wasn't at least as versatile as they wanted, so they were able to ship him off for a guy who's a little bit more versatile and a veteran like Peverly. And Stewart, they were able, you know, they included him in there as well. You know, he's not the best along the boards. It's not bad when he has a puck. Another thing I have to talk about, and it's a little bit as an aside quickly, the team's puck support is not very good in both zones. A lot of times they get outnumbered. But another thing is, this team has to start putting more men on the puck on the power play. I mean, a lot of times you'll watch the power play, and they have two guys up against two. When you're in the power play...
Three on two,
and you have to win those battles.
And I believe it was Brian Engblom on the TSN Jets broadcast on Thursday night in Ottawa made a comment about that. There was a scramble for the puck in behind... The Jets were on the power play. There was a scramble in behind Ottawa's net, and it was a two-on-two battle, and I believe it was Engblom who said, why don't the Jets have a third guy in there to win that battle and you know, control that puck?
Drew, I think Blake Wheeler is a truck on skates, and I think, just like Nikolai Antropov, they've got two large right wingers, but Antropov has never been physical. And the way I look at it, I don't think Richie that Wheeler's ever going to be Keith Primo or Eric Lindros. I just don't think he is.
I agree.
Blake Wheeler, when he was re-signed, and the Winnipeg media were asking Blake Wheeler, describe yourself, what kind of game do you play for people that haven't seen you, and he said, you know, I'm an emerging power forward. And maybe that label just exists because if you're 6'5" and a forward and a winger especially, you're going to be a power forward. So, yeah, would we like to see Blake Wheeler finish his checks a little bit more and get in there more physically, Drew? Absolutely. As far as answering the question, why isn't he more physical, I can't answer that. Maybe he doesn't maybe so,
you know,
think
it's as... Go back to when you played hockey when you were a kid. Seriously. I mean, Drew,
sorry,
I know...
I'm out.
Drew, I know when you played, there were shin pads, were magazines, but... In all honesty, though, there's some players who...
How would you know? You got kicked out of every game as a kid. Your anger was too much.
Who are made to be physical. And some guys who weren't. Some guys who move away from the contact like you, Drew. Some guys who engage in it like me. No, but in all honesty, Drew, but that's... It's in your makeup, though, Drew. It's in your makeup, whether you're a physical player or not. And
Drew's a lover, not a fighter.
But sometimes, when you know, even in any team, it's your... You know, some guys, it's a big guy, just doesn't like to engage in contact. When you played... Some of the big guys on the team didn't engage in contact. Some of the small guys would hit everybody. That's just the way it is. It's not him. And so you're asking him to try and be somebody he isn't. That's why I like him moving to this line. Take advantage of what he is.
So what is he?
He's a quick skating, great stick handling, pretty good shot, good wrist shot, you know, hopefully top six winger, likely a second liner if you're really going to opt top out. He's not going to be a first line right winger. You know, hope top out at a second line right winger, be able to create offense, and put pressure on the opposing team with his speed.
You know what I think the thing with Blake Wheeler is? I think he's got tons of talent, and I think I'm a little bit surprised that he hasn't produced more. If you look at the way he plays, he is a very, very good stick handler, and he has to use his body better. He's got a big frame, and you look at Antropov, Antropov, I know, has been criticized not just, you know, this year. He's been criticized going back to when he was on Toronto. I think Antropov is a fantastic hockey player. He's not overly physical.
He's been their second best forward.
I've liked his game throughout the season. And I mean, he was
going to like him because if he was a big Canadian player, everybody would have
His name was Ander as opposed to Antropov something, and if it was a Canadian name as opposed to a Russian name, he would not get as bad of a rap as he does.
Absolutely.
We were listening to Rick Rouse's post-game show, and you know, Antropov was probably the second best forward on the ice for the Jets against Pittsburgh. I think it was Monday night.
He's been arguably the second or third best forward
every
all season.
Night. And he played a very solid game. He did a lot of nice things. And he's getting grief from everybody that calls in. And, you know, I love hockey fans. They couldn't actually articulate a problem with him. They couldn't point to something he did during the game.
I want him traded.
Give me Crosby for him. Antropov for Crosby. Crosby's damaged goods. It's a good deal.
When Antropov's on the
ice, who's going to say no to that? Pittsburgh or the Jets?
I don't know why he's so hated. I mean, he's a productive player, and he creates offense, especially on a team that can't create any offense.
When Antropov's in the corner,
he's good on the board,
or going around a defenseman, watch how he uses his reach.
That's right.
Watch how he gets the puck to his teammates. That's something Wheeler's going to have to do. You can tell that Wheeler this year is going to go. He's going to blast by someone and cut to the net and get goals. He's going to get goals like that. He's got that talent. It hasn't happened yet for him, but
that's a line. Well, you know, Antropov, Burmistrov, and Wheeler. That's a line that creates some matchup problems for opposing teams, just based on their size.
Yeah.
Their size, their reach, their ability.
My point is, like, when you have... Burmistrov is very good along the boards and protecting
strong on the puck.
Yeah, though he hasn't played as well as that aspect as he did against Pittsburgh, but he's got that element to him. And then you got Antropov who's good along the boards. And what I like to see is those guys on the boards and then Wheeler cutting in and be able to take advantage of his quickness. So keeping pursuit of him as a defender and a shot, good wrist shot. So if you could take advantage of... You could use... You know, they are what they are, these players. It's the old Bill Belichick line. Coach to their strength. Play them into their strengths. You know, don't make them what they aren't. I mean, Blake Wheeler, at this point in his career, guys, he is what he is.
He's not going to be...
He's not going to be the emerging power forward. He's not Keith Tkachuk. He's not going to be a guy like that. You know what you have. Coach to it. And I like this move. I really do. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but I do think it could work.
Well,
line wasn't working.
Mad Little Wheeler was not working.
Wasn't working.
It has not been working. No. And so maybe this is the jolt that they all need. I mean, I don't know that Wellwood's necessarily the answer on that line.
I don't see that working.
I mean, it's peculiar why they refuse to, you know, why they're, why they continue to go back to Wellwood.
The problem is you can't put the second line, guys, the way it is. And then make the first line go together, unless you want to switch one of those guys onto their off wing.
Right.
And they're both left wingers. I mean, don't get me wrong, a left-hand shooting guy, which Ladd and Kane both are, can play the right side quite effectively, especially Kane protecting the puck, you know, with his left arm and angling and using his speed. That actually could work. And I like him to that role better than Ladd because he's faster than Ladd and he's got better size. Maybe that is something they should explore. But I understand right now the way I don't. The one thing is, if you put the second line together, it's hard to keep the first line. Although I think I might experiment with Evander Kane on the right side. I think that on that top line, I think that might be something they got to do. But they got to find him ice time regardless. And if you're not going to find him ice time at even strength, you have to pump up his power play time because he played 2 minutes last game. Some of the other guys played five. There's really no reason for me to think that, And also on the power play, you can move guys around. You don't need to play left wing or right wing or center. I mean, you're going to have a certain structure. You can have a guy play on his off position on the power play.
They got nothing to lose. And I'd rather see Kane getting those minutes than Wellwood. We know what Wellwood is. And it just doesn't make any, it just doesn't make logical sense.
Thinking about it like now, I like the second line and the way it's constructed. For an experimental purposes, right?
Yeah,
so if that's the case, then maybe throw Kane at the right wing. Maybe try it.
What about the power play? It got its first couple goals in Toronto.
I don't mind the power play.
It seems like it's coming together a bit.
I really like those top two guys on the point. They really create it. People talk about moving Byfuglien either to forward, which I'm not in favor of.
Half the time anyways.
But Byfuglien to forward or putting him in front of the net in the power play. I actually don't like it, putting him in front of the net in the power play.
He's got a great shot.
That, and yeah, exactly, and he's hard on the puck. And what you really do is you isolate him and you take away that point threat.
I'll keep your thought. I think it's fine if Byfuglien transitions from maybe the half boards point position to go in front of the net
exactly.
if it's a set play. But let's not get obsessed with putting him in front of the net
exactly.
every single time
because,
the Jets have a power
because
play.
Because him moving around makes a defense track. If they turn their head the wrong way,
yeah.
he can beat them or somebody else is out of position. I like him on the power play moving around. I like Enstrom being the quarterback there. I actually don't mind the power play. I think the power play could produce some good things. The penalty kill is another story.
Are we going to open up the phone lines? I want to hear what other people have to say.
I don't know what they're doing on the penalty kill.
Let's open up the phone lines.
Hang on. Before we do that, let's go to break. I want to talk about the penalty kill and see when you just said you don't know what they're doing on the penalty kill. So I want to talk about that when we come back.
And
on the
open
other
up
side.
The phone lines.
Would you be quiet for a second?
Open up the phone lines.
Would you be quiet for a second?
Ezzy's the boss, Drew.
Ezzy's not the boss. Just because he's wearing meat on his shirt, it doesn't make him the boss.
I need to talk to my people, Drew.
Justin Bieber called. He wants you to go spend time with
him.
Are
you serious? Did he actually call?
He just called. Yeah, he called for you. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 12.9. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can tweet at us at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website, of course, is www.illegalcurve.com. Tweet from Illegal Curve contributor Kyle Kozier, listening online from his new home in Minneapolis. He says to at IC Richie P., Craig McTavish is teaching Claude Noel how to ruin Evander Kane a la Robbie Shrimp. Which is
a bit tongue-in-cheek. We're talking about completely two different talents, but I...
yeah.
That's a good Kyle line right there.
Yeah, Kyle's animosity towards Craig McTavish has been well documented, right?
Drew, another before the break, we were talking
really
about...
hate Craig.
We were talking about Dustin Byfuglien and David Perlman, who's currently living in the Cayman Islands, a good friend of ours, says, at Illegal Curve, how can you not like Big Buff in front of the net on the power play? It won Chicago a Stanley Cup. And he's right, but I think he can be more effective on
Jonathan
the points.
I think Jonathan Taves, Patrick Kane, and Duncan Keith won on the Stanley Cup. But he was an asset, obviously, in those playoffs.
Yeah, the point is reasonable. Let's talk about the penalty.
By the way,
kill.
earlier in the show, we talked about the Atlanta first round pick.
Yeah,
they got from New Jersey. They end up trading that in the Byfuglien trade.
Okay, so they
Chicago
ended up,
had it. So,
okay,
yeah,
there you go.
Anyhow,
anyways, let's talk about the penalty kill.
By the way, it was announced Jones will be in the lineup for Meech tonight.
I know we did that.
That wasn't confirmed. That's a confirmation.
No, it's confirmation.
Oh, it's confirmation now. Okay,
true.
Fine.
You know what?
I'm throwing Ezzy under the bus any chance I get. I have to spend the next 12 hours with him,
for
God's sake.
You're not supposed to push me in front of the bus like you did on Thursday night.
Drew, can we talk about the penalty kill? Why are you getting off track?
I wasn't. You was the one.
Open up the phone lines, Drew. People have heard enough of you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the penalty kill.
Okay, one of the things I'd like to see on the penalty kill, well, they're chasing a bit. That's one of the things that I'm a little bit concerned about. You know, for example, that goal that by Phil Kessel in the Toronto game. Ladd pressuring, I think it was, I forget who was on the boards there before it went to Phaneuf and then went to Kessel. It was Ladd pressuring wasn't as much the issue as it was Brian Little was far too deep in the zone and then he wasn't able to close on the points. They need to just be a little bit better positionally. One thing I like to see in terms of personnel, I would like to see more Zach Bogosian. I mean, you're trying to turn him into the lockdown penalty killer. Lockdown defender.
I thought he's played better.
And I agree. I think he's played really well lately. I think he's been more in himself. He hasn't been chasing the puck as much.
Richie, in the Ottawa game, he had 1 minute and 30 seconds of shorthanded time.
Exactly.
And 20 minutes of
and
ice time.
Let me give you the last. I mean, he played 22 minutes against Pittsburgh. He played 2 minutes on the shorthanded, which I like, because that's almost as much as the other guys did. In the Toronto game, he played only 1:53 shorthanded. Again, there wasn't that many penalties in that game. And then against Ottawa, he played 1:36, and that's far less than some of the other guys. The question is, why is he playing less? You know, he played less than Johnny Oduya on the penalty kill against Ottawa.
Oduya was so good defensively.
He played less than him on the penalty kill against Toronto, and he played more than him on the penalty kill against Pittsburgh. My point is actually he didn't. He played less than him in all three games. So I don't know why Oduya is playing more on the penalty kill than Zach Bogosian is. I don't think Johnny Oduya is a very good penalty killer guy. I'm not mean to pick on Johnny Oduya. And I want to talk about it in a second about what he means moving forward. But Bogosian, to me, needs to be logging more minutes on the bench. I know one guy plays the left side, one guy plays the right side, and we can get into that. But even so, Bogosian, if Byfuglien's not playing on the PK, which he's not, and that's good because he shouldn't be, because he's not, then Bogosian is one of the two right-handed, one of the three right, one of the two right defensemen who's then going to be played on the penalty kill. He needs to see more time on there. If you want to make him that lockdown defender, you make sure he's on the PK. And he's got good speed, and he's physical, and you know, sometimes there's some questions with some of the reads he makes, but in terms of his, sometimes he makes good decisions with the puck, sometimes he doesn't make great decisions. On the PK, you're just dumping the puck down the ice. I think he needs to increase his ice time. Noel needs to increase Bogosian's ice time to be up there with Mark Stewart.
Let's talk about Bogosian in that, I mean, in the preseason, I guess it's just preseason, he looked very frantic. Always frantic with the puck, never, you know, never making the confident, sure play. Since the season started, and I attribute a lot of this to a couple factors. One, just getting your legs back under you. Mm-hmm. And two, Charlie Huddy, I think his influence can't be underestimated.
And three, Mark Stewart.
And Mark Stewart certainly has been a nice a nice safety valve for him. But Bogosian looks a lot more confident out there. And I mean, he still has bouts of franticness, but he does seem as though he's more... You know, the game is slowing down for him.
Yes, that's a good way to put it, Drew.
The game is, he's making the right play. He's making the smart play to get the puck out of his own zone. And, I mean, I don't remember who it was. I think it might have been, it was one of the columnists or writers said something like, if Charlie Huddy can't get through to Zach Bogosian, yeah, nobody can.
Yeah.
But it does seem so far that that Huddy and Huddy's been a very good asset for Bogosian and bringing his game up to the next level.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. There's still some progress that needs to be made there. Some decision-making, and certainly hasn't reached a ceiling by any means, but there has been progress, and that's all. And that's what you want to see at the end of the day with this team. You want to see progress because they're not going to make the playoffs.
Are the Jets hanging back a little too much on the PK? Are they letting the action come to them? Is their box... Is it too low in their zone?
It's somewhat frantic. I'm not so sure about that. It's somewhat frantic at the top of the box. The two forwards seem to always be rotating, and sometimes they pressure the puck and they don't communicate well. And then the other defenseman's wide open, and then he has so much time to make a decision that it's easy for them to put some points on the board. I need to see a little bit better of that. Sometimes they get chasing down low and they're out of position. It's the forwards that concern me more than the defenseman on the PK.
Who should be their top forwards on the PK?
They still have to flesh that out a bit, Drew. And I'm not sure. I need to see more of it before I come, you know, with a concrete answer. But overall, obviously, guys that have been logging big minutes are guys like, you know, Thorburn, who played it last year, and Jimmy Slater, and, you know, Little and Ladd. And Ladd plays a responsible defensive game. I'm not so sure. They have Andropov out there, too. They have a lot of guys who've been playing it, and I still haven't been able to determine who their actual best penalty killers are. And I'll have to watch for that more.
Let's talk about, okay, so that's the PK. And the PP we spoke about in the last segment, and we liked how it was progressing. One issue that has to be a red flag, and it's been obvious in the Toronto game, and it's been obvious in the Ottawa game, that face-off, the face-off problem they're having. They're losing every face-off.
Yeah, and Michael Remus of IllegalCurve.com and obviously this radio show, Our Desk, broke it down, and... It's not getting any better. Right now, Jimmy Slater's number one, just above 50%. I don't have it in front of me. Hopefully, one of you guys can pull it up. But it's a problem. Antropov is number two.
That's a problem right there, that Antropov's number two.
It's a problem.
What's the answer? Is there an answer in terms of the talent that's on this team right now in terms of the face-off?
They need a face-off guy, Richie. And, I mean, Brian Little, I believe, lost... 90% to David Steckel in the Leafs game?
I think it was 0 for 10, has he?
It was, so he's 0 for it, so I thought it was more like 10%, but that's a problem. I mean, you can't have that. You just can't have that. I don't know what the solution is. He's not going to get it. Brian Little is not a naturally gifted face-off guy, and it's a problem, and I don't know what the simple answer to that
is. You don't have face-off guys on your team.
Well, how can they come into the season? And is it like, I mean, obviously, you know, you look at all aspects of your team when you start the year. And at some point in time, somebody in management probably said, oh, God, we don't have a face-off guy. And they just said, oh, we're okay with that.
Well, sign well, what, who can take some draws?
They're getting killed in every game in face-offs.
Yeah, well, I mean, Drew...
And I mean, granted, David Steckel's the best face-off guy in the league.
Right.
Yeah. So you don't really expect to be, have that, that great of a result against him. So, I mean, I can live with that. But you're getting killed against Ottawa on the face-off draws. And when you Drew, don't, and when you lose guy, face-offs,
you don't have any very good face-off guys. Little's not very good. Antropov's not very good. Bermistrov's not very good. I mean, Shifley's a young guy. He's not very good.
So is this going to change, or is this just going to be how it is all year?
I don't see it changing.
So pretty much what they're saying is, you know, 75% of the time this season.
Not that high, but probably 56, 57.
Yeah, okay, fine. You know, so let's say 60%.
Hurt your possession.
Yeah. And this is a team that doesn't, I mean, they need as, face-offs should be, you know, granted it's become more of a premium in the NHL nowadays. But you should be
people
able to acquire.
People are realizing it's a skill that can certainly add value to your team point total.
I mean, it's something that they need to rectify.
Drew and people have been working with Slater in practice, and that's something that you can teach to an extent. But face-off guys are face-off guys. I think it's a hand-eye factor. It's a strength factor. Some of the guys, even the form that they're showing to me is flawed.
We'll talk about that. What do you mean? Talk about form on face-offs.
You know a guy's really not an experienced face-off guy when he's got his hand really, really high up on the shaft. Because what's happening there is you're losing leverage. And when you have your hand high up on the stick and your other hand's far apart, you're not going to have the same leverage as a guy who's obviously more experienced, is holding his hands closer together and is able to get more strength and get under the puck. You know, if these guys are so bad at face-offs, which sometimes they are, then you have to start doing the tie-up method, and you have to hope that your wingers will come in and help you out. And I haven't necessarily seen that. A lot of those face-off losses have been clean. You know, a guy like Antropov can certainly use his strength in that regard. And a guy like Welba is going to be more for quickness. And also, you know, I play matchups more in that, and it sounds crazy, but, you know, depending on who you're playing up against and who the forwards are, and, you know, maybe Wellwood Wellwood's on the first line tonight, right? So, to me, depending on how the you know, if it's a bigger guy, maybe Little, who's not bigger, but he's bigger than Wellwood, takes the draws, and you think you have an advantage. But if it's a smaller guy, so if it's not Stahl tonight, and their second-line center, I think, is Jokinen, right? It's Jokinen, yeah. So, you know, if it's both those guys are bigger than Little and Stahl certainly, then I'm pretty sure Jokinen's bigger than Little. Yeah, I'm almost positive, and then Wellwood. You know, maybe even a smaller guy like Tim Brent's a really good face-off guy. If it's Tim Brent on the face-off and you have Wellwood, well, Wellwood's not going to have a huge size disadvantage there, I don't believe. I don't have Tim Brent's numbers in front of me.
It doesn't strike me as... Right. You don't think of Tim Brent as being an overly large player.
So maybe that's when you throw Wellwood in there, because in his quick hands, and he can win some draws. So, I mean, maybe you're playing the matchups a bit. You're trying to, you know, take advantage of those things and scrounge out any extra percentage points that you can. That's a coaching factor. And that's something Noel... And I have to say something about Noel before we go to break. Noel, I really like the way Noel's employed the timeouts. When the players are tired at the end of an icing call, because you can't change your players on an icing call in your own zone. And twice, I think it's been now, he's called timeouts to rest his players who are on the ice. And I think that's good coaching, because you don't save those timeouts. Use them because you have them.
One thing we'll talk about next segment is pulling the goalie on the power play with 5 minutes to go.
Absolutely in favor of it.
Okay, and we'll talk about that, because most people, it's definitely a different move, and it's thinking outside the box. So it's good. So we'll talk about that next segment. Let's go to commercial break. When we come back, we'll get some audio from the Jets Game Day skate. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. Big week coming up at Rumors. Brian Callen is in town starting Wednesday through Saturday. He's one of the first stars of Mad TV and also was featured in The Hangover, The Hangover 2, and Old School. Three of my favorite movies, I'll have you know. For a ticket information, you can call Rumors at 488-4520.
Old School.
You liked Old School.
Great movie.
Hangover, also pretty good movie.
Way to give 110%, Marissa.
There you go, attaboy. Michael Remus, who is not in studio with us this morning as per usual, he's down at MTS Center gathering up audio after the Jets game day skate. He was part of, I believe, a media scrum with Andrew Ladd. Let's listen to that audio right now.
Well, Andrew, does your wife still think you're good looking?
She's actually in Mexico for a wedding right now, so she's unable to see this. Definitely not a good look.
When's the last time you wore a visor? Was it junior?
I wore one at World Championships this past summer.
So it's not going to hinder you, or is it not going to be a difference today?
Well, I mean, it'd be a little adjustment, but I'm sure it won't take long to get used to. And it's World Championships. I got used to in a game or two, so it was fun.
Did it be a good news for the doctor yesterday?
I guess it was. He didn't really tell me anything I didn't already know anyway, so it was. I guess that was the good news. But as long as I can still play, I'm happy.
Broken arm or no?
I don't know yet. I didn't get the x-rays back, so I'm not really sure.
What went through your mind when you looked
at it? Not much. No, I mean, I knew I got it right off the nose. I knew it was my eye, so it was more like the... It was just... I don't know, it's a weird feeling when you get hit in the face. It's like you go numb and saw the blood and off the ice.
How's the vision right?
Yeah, the vision's fine. Swelling, it'd be nice if the swelling went down a little bit more, but hopefully we'll try to work on that for tonight.
Still special to play in Carolina?
Yeah, it's always fun to play teams that you're a part of, especially when you won a cup there and you got some good friends over there still. So, you're always a little extra motivation for teams that trade you away. And, it's every time, it feels like I fight them, I've had, a little more jump in my step.
You and Brian had a lot of success against Carolina last year. What was it against them that kind of slowed things down for you guys?
I don't know. I mean, it's just over the course of the season, I guess sometimes it's just coincidence. Those are the games you feel good or you have things going. But, so it was a pretty good rivalry between, Atlanta and Carolina. And you're always used to playing those teams. And like I said, I guess I had a little more extra motivation playing against them every time.
What do you remember most from those early years
of
Carolina breaking?
Well, I mean, obviously, the first year there had a big impact on me and my career, and a lot of things I learned. So, I guess those are the things I really remember is winning that championship there, and have a lot of good friends and friendships that'll last a long time from there too.
Did you have a mentor, or was there someone that kind of guided you or helped lead the way?
We had a lot of guys there. We had so many veteran guys, Doug Waite, Mark Recchi, Rod Brindamore, Ray Whitney, Glenn Wesley, Kevin Adams. I mean, the list went on and on. We had a really older group that, was great for a young guy to be a part of and really see how those guys worked.
What's the biggest lesson you took from those guys?
I just think that probably the biggest thing was their work ethic on and off the ice. As a group, we definitely were probably ahead of it.
Andrew Ladd speaking with the media following the Jets game day skate. Sort of people forget about his time on Carolina. That's where he won his first cup.
I didn't forget about that.
Well, nobody talks about his time on Carolina.
For Tuomo or Ruutu?
I'd say that was Ruutu. It's a better trade for Chicago.
Think about it, Drew. Andrew Ladd, captain of the Winnipeg Jets, 26 years old, two cups already. I mean, with two different teams, that's significant. The guy is a natural-born winner. He is. It's indisputable.
Okay.
Go Jets, go.
Now, I mean, you could come up with, he's won two cups and he's been an impact. He's had an impact on both. I think for him, I think there probably is something personal about being a top two-line player and a cup winner.
Sure. I mean, you have that much more of an impact that's on right. it. You join a team for a stretch drive, you contribute a little bit, but were you there all year through the trials and tribulations, that sort of thing?
Well, no, he was.
I know he was, but I'm saying these new guys, like when Ray Bourque went to Colorado just to win his cup, he wasn't there for the build-up and the anticipation and everything else. If the Jets win a cup in the next 5 years and he's part of this team, that cup would probably be more meaningful than the other two cups.
Yes, exactly.
That's all I'm saying. We have Blake Wheeler audio from Jets game day earlier today. Let's go to that next.
Michael Remus with Illegal Curve. I'm here talking to Blake Wheeler. Blake, you're playing on a new line tonight. Is that something that you request, or how does that come up?
Well, I hope. I don't know. You got to ask those two guys. Maybe they request a line change. I don't know. Maybe. I hope not.
You didn't request it, though? You didn't?
No, I don't think anyone's ever requested a line change before. Not that I'm aware of. Like I said, though, maybe ask those two guys. Maybe they requested it.
What can you expect playing with Antropov and Bruinsson? They seem to show good chemistry early on this year.
Yeah, they're playing well. And, I think just do, the same things I've been doing, just skating and shooting. And, I think if we're hard on the puck and protecting the puck and playing within the offensive zone, we're going to create a lot of scoring chances.
You've taken a lot of shots this year, but maybe you haven't shown up on the scoring sheet. Do you think that's just a case of bad luck?
Well, luck plays into it, but at the same time, if you're creating scoring chances, that's kind of how you gauge yourself. So, I feel like we've been creating a lot of chances. Sooner or later, they're going to go in.
What can you expect from Carolina soon?
Well, they're always a tough matchup. They have they play really well defensively. They have really good goaltending, and they have some firepower up front. So it's always the case of trying to get one early, especially in our home building. If we can get the crowd into it early, it's going to make it tougher for them.
Yep. A new twig tonight.
tonight to look like? The white hot?
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. That's I've only seen a few of them. So at this point, whatever, I'll try anything right now.
At the quarter of the year, saying you couldn't score in a squirt, feeling a little differently today? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's frustrating, especially after a game like last game. You know, felt all around the net, and it's just kind of one of those things right now where you're doing pretty much everything except for putting it in the net. So, you know, try not to get frustrated. You just try to do the same things. You know, if you're getting 5-6 shots a night on net, you're doing something right, and sooner or later they're going to go in.
Is it a scary moment for you when you went down? Or I know you said it's been something that was ongoing, but, you know, at home it kind of looked like it might have been an Achilles problem or something.
Yeah, right away, I mean, anytime you catch a rut like that, it's a little unnerving, but luckily, after a couple minutes, it felt fine. So it was initially a little bit dramatic, but after a few minutes, it was fine.
That was, you know, that last question about that incident in Ottawa, that was a very odd, you know, we were watching the game, and all of a sudden he just went down, like, you know, without being touched. I mean, we realized watching the replay that he toe-picked, and he's not a figure skater, so he doesn't have a toe-pick on a skate. But, you know, that was a really odd sort of play if you just watch the game live as to how that happened. So it is fortunate that he avoided injury. I look for a big game from Blake Wheeler today.
You know, Drew, he hasn't played well, and I think...
I don't necessarily agree with that.
I think, well, he hasn't produced.
Yeah.
Maybe he's looked good.
Yeah.
But he needs to get going, and I think this is the right thing to do at this point.
You know, this team doesn't seem to... They haven't... Their confidence doesn't seem to be shaken.
It's a long season, Drew.
I know it's a long season. I know it's a long season, but it does sound like, you know, I thought it was the optional practice they had yesterday. Not everybody hit the ice, but apparently everybody was at the iceplex. I think that's important. You know, they realized they had a bad performance against Ottawa, and you know, they weren't willing to rest on their laurels and just say, okay, you know, we'll come back at it on Saturday against the Hurricanes. They went to the iceplex. They hit the ice, those that were, you know, there. I mean, Ladd, I don't think, was on the ice. I think he was getting his face sutured up or whatever. But it does seem like they're still, you know, just they realize it's a short season and a long season, and they're still, you know, doing the things necessary to try and get a victory.
Can we talk about what happened during the interview there?
I think we really should. It was off air. The truth of the matter is, as entertaining as the show may or may not be, it's about 100 times more entertaining off the air when our mics aren't on. As anybody who's ever listened to the show will know, we are big Seinfeld fans on this program. And there's a famous Seinfeld scene where they're waiting for a booth at Monk's Diner. And they're instead just all sitting up at the bar top. And anybody who's ever sat at the bar knows you can't hear what the guy four seats down is saying. It's an impossible way to have a conversation. So we were listening to the interview, and I'm not sure what Ezzy was
doing. He didn't take his headphones off. So everybody, the audio is playing in the studio. We can take our headphones off because our mics aren't on. But Ezzy didn't realize, so his headphones were on, and so he couldn't hear Drew and I talking.
Right. And so Richard says... You know, Ezzy's like, what? What did I miss? What did I miss? What did I miss? And then Richard goes, Newman's dead? Because that goes back to that Seinfeld episode. And Ezzy looks at him with all seriousness. And Ezzy, I love you. But with all seriousness and goes, what? The actor? Newman? He's dead?
I still don't get the joke.
We're going to go show you that episode of Seinfeld.
I know what episode you're talking about.
Then why don't you get the joke?
I actually just wanted to know, I still don't know what you guys were talking about. You were talking about something relevant to the show, but you decided to make me the brunt of a joke, so.
Well, we wouldn't expect anything different. This is pretty much what we do, is throw each other under the, as a high-speed bus every single week, and that wouldn't happen any other way.
Are we going NHL after this?
Yeah, we are going NHL. So we'll go around the NHL for the next couple segments.
Hey, Drew Chip, Alexander, who we had on, you saw that? He said, as if Eric Staal needed a reminder... Big story in the Globe and Mail today on Mark's continued struggles with post-concussion symptoms. So
that's got
relevant to the question we were asking him about how Eric Staal has been dealing with knocking his brother Mark out. So.
Yeah, and apparently the cover page of the Globe also has a large photo of Eric's hit on Mark Staal.
That's nice.
I mean, you know, make the guy feel a little bit worse. I'm sure he doesn't feel bad enough he's taking his brother out of the game and giving him a concussion symptom.
If they don't stop Eric Staal tonight, they're not going to win. You always have to stop that guy. He's one of the best players in the league, in my opinion.
I agree. I would agree with that sentiment. You recovered well after your Newman debacle, so way to do that. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290. Let's head to commercial break. Welcome Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, the website, www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Mm-hmm. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your music listening device each and every week.
iPod.
Not necessarily.
People have other things, Ezzy.
I used to have an iRiver, and I still do have an iRiver. In fact, it was from the 1980s. It was one of the first prototypes.
That would be the Walkman.
Let's move along, Drew.
Let's move along. Okay, that fell on. I made an AIDS joke at my expense. I thought you guys would be all over it.
You can't use our jokes against yourself. That doesn't work like that.
It's not 8 Mile here.
8 Mile.
Next, he then uses insults against himself so people won't use it against him. We're not allowing for that.
Did you just drop an 8 Mile reference?
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. Drew used to live on 8 Mile. I don't understand why you're so surprised that we'd bring it up.
Drew, you once walked 8 Miles.
Nah, not because I wanted to. 8 Miles total in my life, maybe, but that's about it. You know, I would do anything pretty much to avoid walking 8 Miles. Great. Laughing stock as usual.
You did a good turnaround there, Ezzy, huh?
Yeah, it's the old switcheroo.
The old switcheroo.
Thought that was what the good for the goose is good for the gander.
What does that even mean?
What is a gander anyways? It's a goose that's had an old switcheroo played on it. Oh, boy, we need a life. Let's talk about the Jets bidding for the Heritage Classic in 2014.
Very excited about that.
I had a feeling you would be.
Well, come on. I mean, we're getting a new stadium.
Whatever. It's cool. I can't wait to sit outside in -35.2 to watch the Jets lose 2-0 to Carolina.
Let's be honest. 3 years from now, we can torment each other outside instead of in the studio. But to be honest with you, I think that people were talking about this.
To be honest, 3 years from now, I hope not to talk to either of you.
We'll all be married and not be friends anymore. Well, Drew will for sure be married. Hopefully, I just won't be single and living at home. I honestly think this is a tremendous idea because it makes sense. We're fresh off getting our hockey team back, and I think we're going to get it. I mean, this isn't based on anything. Just the way True North has the reputation True North has, and the fact that we're going to have a shiny new stadium.
The new stadium is the biggest factor. They wouldn't play at that stadium or something thereof that is located in the St. James area. That looks like it's like the biggest. It looks like a pile of garbage. Like seriously, that stadium is actually so old. It's like decrepit. I'm so happy they're in the new stadium. If the old stadium was here, they wouldn't have a chance.
What are you talking about? I love walking up to my seats and have pigeons dropping their excrement on me.
If they didn't have the new stadium, it wouldn't be an option. They have a new stadium. Obviously, it's fresh here, so that's going to be the reason why they're going to be in contention.
There's three big events that an NHL team can bid for:
the draft,
the All-Star Game. And the Heritage Classic in Canada. Of the three,
they're all pretty blah.
Well, which one would you think? Which one would you like the most?
Of the three,
yeah.
Probably the All-Star Game, and I don't think the game matters, but just to have all those superstars in the area, in the arena, and in the skills competition. It's just cool to be able to see so many skilled players in one location. I think.
I think it, for me would be, and this is not. Okay, this has nothing to do with revenue or anything like that for the fan experience. I would have to say the Heritage Classic. I love all three events. I know that, the All-Star Game is not maybe as important. Let's be honest, it was never important.
No, it doesn't mean anything.
But it's maybe made fun of a little bit in hockey circles because it's really just an opportunity for fans to watch, it's a spectacle more so. But and the Outdoor Classic is definitely a spectacle, but there's a hockey game to play, and I think it would be really cool for the city of Winnipeg to get something like that. We don't get, the amount of, international or national events that cities like Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal get. Yeah, we've had the Pan Am Games twice, but I think this would be a great thing for the city, to have 35,000, 40,000 fans in a cold atmosphere and maybe get another Western Canadian team, Richie, to play us. So I think
probably put a team like Toronto in a guaranteed ratings.
I mean, I'm sure, that's going to draw ratings regardless. If it's the Heritage Classic, everybody's going to watch it. It's the only game on.
I guarantee they put the Leafs or the Habs in that game.
Yeah,
I mean, I would hope that they, you don't think they, well, that was, we asked that question on illegalcurve.com this week.
The Leafs haven't played a Heritage game, so.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
Calgary played Montreal and Edmonton played Montreal, right?
I was thinking it would be Calgary and Edmonton for the proximity, but as far as ratings go, which is a huge thing.
Which is the reason
NHL games,
only do this for ratings.
Didn't we talk about this last year? The ratings that the Pittsburgh-Washington game got were even surpassed what they were thinking. They were very good. So that has to factor into it as well, Richie. You make a good point.
To me, I think it would be the Heritage Classic, and it's because it's the only game that actually matters.
Nobody asked you.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I think you asked us, the analysts of the show, as the host. I'm not sure if you really get. Does Drew get an opinion?
I don't think Drew gets an opinion.
I tell you what, I have an opinion on both of you right now. I'm, you know, biting my tongue, not expressing it on air. The All-Star game would be the least interesting one from my perspective. I know I don't have an opinion. The draft,
we
I know you were. You were at the draft.
I love the draft,
Richie
too.
Went to the draft
you
in
went
Montreal.
I love the draft.
Richie went to Montreal, and me, Remus, and Kyle went in Minneapolis, and I had an absolutely amazing time, and I think that you could make a strong argument that the draft for Winnipeg would be very good.
Wouldn't it be Kyle, Remus, and I?
Yeah, twice now. As you know, my mom, who's not a grammar professor or anything, is going to be you know, sending over some tutorials to you.
I like to put myself first, me. Me, Kyle, and Remus. I know it's bothering people out there, especially the literary giants of our listenership.
Which is odd, because most of our listenership, I believe, is illiterate.
Yeah, it's the way we like it.
Just as we are.
Yeah, exactly. But matching the hosts and the analysts, you know, of course.
What's the next on the list?
Well, the next on the list, hang on, is this, you wanted to talk about the Hockey Canada, the Bob Nicholson.
I don't like that at all. I mean, the Bob Nicholson wrote a 9-page paper. Which they're acting as though it's some kind of, like, it took so long to write a 9-page paper on this, about moving the draft age from 18 to 19 years old.
Why did it need 9 pages?
I don't know, but I also don't, it could use more, to be honest.
Could
but
be
I,
one
I,
page.
I also don't know why, first of all, the Players Association would never agree to this, and why should they? I don't see why, I mean, to be honest with you, and you know, if you read closely, Bob Nicholson said, oh, but there would be some exceptions for exceptional players. Well, first of all, you can't create a rule and then already have the exceptions, because it's a slippery slope with the exceptions and how far it goes. But in any event, there's 18-year-olds who've proven in the past and this year that they can play in the National Hockey League and are very good players. Nugent Hopkins, Landeskog, you know, last year Jeff Skinner scored, you know, it was close to 60 points. If they can play, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to see the best players in the world, and you shouldn't restrict their ability to make a living. I think it's a stupid idea, and I think there's a little bit of self-serving aspect in that. You know what? Doesn't it help the World Juniors to have all the best players there? Better quality? More money? I mean, let's be real.
You and I both don't particularly
Hockey Canada wants to increase the CHL quality. They want to keep it like that. There's a lot of self-interest involved in this, and not just the players. I think it's more so Bob Nicholson's looking out for number one and who he's working for.
Yeah, and Richie, I haven't really... I've heard this in the news, and I haven't really explored it too much. Are we getting any type of consensus from outside hockey world
that
this
happen.
Is in agreement? Because I read this and heard this, and to be honest with you, the first thing that I thought of was, what's the reasoning behind this?
Yeah.
Why prevent 18-year-olds from hitting the NHL?
Well, the NBA did it. That's why I always had to try and copy what the NBA does.
But if there's a logical... maybe there is a logical
reason. I'm not sure how it can be legal. I mean...
What was the line? I was watching on TV yesterday, and we're saying David Stern's line about it, asking if it's legal. He goes, well, I'm a lawyer. And I know that it's legal in that tone that he has.
Of course, the dismissive, how could you ask such a stupid question?
Why would you
tone?
Ask such a stupid question?
I know. But, I mean, the truth is, if you were an 18-year-old player and you thought you were good enough, but you weren't deemed to be exceptional, I don't understand how a league can prevent you from doing
it. You know it's flawed when you're already proposing a rule with exceptions like that.
When you're building in the exception to him, when you have to, you know, had LeBron James been coming out of you know, NBA at a time when he couldn't go straight or sort of couldn't go straight from high school to NBA, what purpose would he serve by playing a year in juniors? What purpose would any of these guys?
What purpose would Taylor Hall last year be served?
If they're good enough to play in the league, why wouldn't they? Why can't they be there?
And there's a reasoning for that.
NHL too, has he?
Yeah, and there's a reasoning. The 18-year-old, I believe, has been the age for a long time. It's not like this is something that, you know, was introduced in the post-expansion era. That's the age where you become an adult, and you typically mature physically at the junior age too. So I mean, we'll see what happens with this. You know, I personally have to, you know, explore it a little bit more.
I'm going back to an old article in the New York Times. David Stern saying, I don't know why our founders decided that age 25 was good for Congress, but I guess they thought that was about maturity. For us, it's a kind of basketball maturity.
He just doesn't care.
No.
He's just like, take me to court about it. What are you going to do? I'm going to say, I'll beat you in court.
So this is not a mandatory direction by anyone that players should go to college. And that's obviously, I think, where the, I don't know enough about the situation, but I'm assuming the legal aspect of this is that they're not restricting their ability to make a living. They can make a living somewhere else in another league.
True.
And that gives them the possibility.
But like, there's absolutely been no scuttlebutt about this, no groundswell of support for this coming from the NHL ranks.
Yeah, no mistake, the Bob Nicholson does have a lot of pull, and you wonder if somebody told him to write it and start this.
I don't see it taking off, though. I don't see anybody saying, yeah, Jeff Skinner really didn't deserve to be in the NHL. Would have you declared Jeff Skinner to be an exceptional talent last season?
I thought he could be good, but obviously that wasn't
surprising. Like, I mean, if this rule had been in place, do you think he would have been exempted from it?
No, exactly. That's the point. And that's why it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, why have an exemption?
Why, if he can't be exempt and he was the best player, the best rookie in the NHL last year,
right.
So who's going to be the exception? Just the first overall pick every year? Is Adam Larson not going to be?
Who's the first overall pick? That's where.
Yeah, Adam. The first overall pick. Is Landeskog? He wasn't the first overall pick.
Right.
It's a random. Well, maybe it's random nonsense as usual.
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah. Just like most of your random nonsense.
We got Anthony coming up. Let's go.
Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back on the other side, Anthony Sanfilippo is going to join us. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Shortly after 11:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're trying to get Anthony Sanfilippo on the line in the interim. We'll keep talking, going around the NHL, do a little bit more on the news and notes front. Richie, you look like you had something you wanted to say.
Songs about Drew's as a fiancé.
American Girl?
It's true. Keep singing, Drew?
No, I'm not going to sing. Nobody wants to hear me sing.
Drew, we're waiting for Anthony Sanfilippo, a good guest. We've had a good friend of the show. We've had many times on the show. I believe this is 11th time, but Carolina Hurricanes tonight, and then we got the Rangers on Monday for Richie's birthday, and then the Jets go on that 7-game road trip starting against Philadelphia. And we always love to talk about Philadelphia, a team that, is off to a really good start. And we're going to talk to Anthony Sanfilippo about a few of the players. Sorry, go ahead, Drew.
I'm surprised that they're off to as hot of a start. I thought they'd have more of a transition period, getting used to their new additions and everything else, getting into the lineup. So, kudos to Laviolette and, Pronger's, he's a polarizing figure, as it were. But if there's one thing you can't accuse him of being, and that's, he's been a winner everywhere he's gone.
He's a Hall of Famer.
He knows how to win.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Of course he's a Hall of Famer, but, he knows how to win everywhere
he
goes.
He's so good.
I know he's so good. But, for a guy who really took a lot of, he drove, the gulf between him and Richards and Carter split that team up.
Yep.
And they've seemed to be no worse for wear.
And, a lot of the tension's been on Jakub Voracek, on Wayne Simmonds. But they've got Sean Couturier playing pretty well in the lineup, and now they've recalled Braden Schenn.
Yeah, Jagr.
Got to talk about Jagr.
You've got. It's a pretty interesting team this year.
They're always an interesting team.
They could surprise me. I honestly didn't think that. I still don't believe they're going to win. They're going to be anywhere near the Stanley Cup race. But
I'm not so sure that they won't be at this point. Once they bring up Braden Schenn, keep in mind, they got a guy as talented as Braden Schenn. They have salary cap difficulties. That's their problem right now, is that they're running into some salary cap troubles.
Yeah, I believe they're still over the cap, right?
Well, they're not over the cap because they can't be over, but it's a daily struggle for them to be within it. And that's the problem that they're running into, and that's why Braden Schenn's not up with the big team right now. This is sort of a team that doesn't need an injury, obviously, but...
No, he was recalled.
It was a salary cap issue.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that they're facing there.
It was also that they could save money, but a certain clause in his contract, apparently, that saved money from sending him down to start the season.
Yeah, it's a daily battle. Let's talk about Sidney Crosby. He's been practicing for a while now, and he still says he doesn't have enough contact.
Yep. That was the report today.
Nobody wants to hit him.
So, what's how's he going to get back into the lineup then?
This is a very slippery slope, Drew, and a very worrisome thing when you talk about concussions. And nobody on Pittsburgh wants to be the guy that sets him up for another year. You don't want to do that. That'd be terrible. So it's really going to be in the games. And guys, who knows? Who knows when he's going to be back? Nobody knows right now.
Yeah.
You would assume in the next couple weeks, but that's the concussions that we talk, and you mentioned earlier Eric Staal and Mark Staal. Sidney Crosby is extremely important to what Pittsburgh does, obviously. More important, one of the most important players in the league. Mark Staal is one of the most important players to his team. And we talk a little bit about the Rangers. I think they're a veteran defenseman away from being, as good of a contender as you can have out there with the chance to make the finals. But without Mark Staal, I'm talking about the veteran defenseman on top of him. Without Mark Staal, it changes them significantly, and concussions are ravaging some of these teams. And another thing that needs to be accounted for, guys, when we're talking about fighting, we talk about that aspect of the game. Staal is not a fight. Crosby's not a fight. So these concussions are coming from all over.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. You can't say that you can't attribute those to those. You can attribute them both to.
And we were out this summer
hockey plays. Chris King.
Yeah, Chris King, who knows all about the stats in terms of concussions and is a great
former New York Ranger.
Yeah, and Winnipeg Jet, obviously. Yep. And he said, I think concussions are 5% or less are caused by fighting. So let's not cloud the issue so much. I mean, I think they're not mutually exclusive, but they're not as intertwined as some may think.
No, but I also don't think. I've never heard a doctor, and this is my point about fighting, I've never heard a doctor recommend punching each other in the head as being a good thing for somebody's long-term health.
I'm not saying it is, Drew, but...
You were.
I'm not saying it is, but I mean...
You were.
But I do think that it's more of a threat with blindside hits and respecting the game than it is fighting. Again, fighting is a consensual act, for the most part. And you know what you're doing when you're bracing yourself to get hit. It's easier than if you don't know it's coming and you get blindsided.
Right. I mean, you can never brace yourself for a hit to the head, as far as I'm concerned.
You can, when you're fighting, you're aware of it, and you understand it's coming, and your body prepares itself for it. I'm no expert on that, but and when you get hit, and like Sidney Crosby, you never see it. And I think we probably can agree that was a purposeful contact by David Steckel.
You think he targeted his head?
He targeted his head, but he made sure to make contact with him. You're playing against the best player in the world. You want to make him pay every time he's anywhere on the ice. I mean, that's hockey. That's sports. That's football. That's sports. Basketball. Michael Jordan against the Pistons and all those guys in the 80s. They want to make him pay. The Knicks, they want to make him pay.
Fair enough. Let's talk about Roberto. Let's shift a little bit and talk about Roberto Luongo.
Let's do it.
I mean, I'm really beginning to, and hate's too strong of a word, I'm really beginning to be dismayed by Vancouver as a media market. Does the Vancouver Province, as a newspaper...
The editorials you're going to talk about?
Do they not have anything more important to be writing about?
That's worrisome.
Major newspaper in a major city writing that your starting goaltender should be traded? Do they have nothing better to do?
It is worrisome.
Who is the boss who sits back and says,
forget social issues today.
Never mind social issues. Forget anything that's more important. It's not. Let's look at Vancouver's record. I mean, they're 3-3-1.
Yeah, they're 500.
The goaltending, I mean...
Seven
games into the season. Let's jump on the bandwagon. Let's
Kessler didn't play all those games.
Credibility. How can this newspaper claim to have any credibility anymore on practically any... If you're a journalist for this newspaper, you're the beat writer for the Canucks, and you have to work with Roberto Luongo on a day-by-day basis... How can you look him in the face and say, Roberto, do you mind answering a few questions? I work for the Vancouver Province, the same newspaper that tried to get you traded out of town.
Fair enough.
I guess it's that's absurd. A question for Ben
it's
Kuzma
insulting.
Or Jason Botchford, who we've had on before. It is, because Luongo's a world-class goaltender. He was our goalie, and he won the gold medal for Canada. He was a huge part of that. And they've been doing this, Drew, for years. To Luongo, and he always starts off poorly. Go back and look at his stats, and I don't have them in front of me, but Luongo's not a good starter at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, because, Luongo was the only reason they lost in the finals. I mean, the Sedins were great.
Yeah,
Sedins were really good in the finals.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Craig Button said that earlier today when we had him on just before 10 o'clock. He said, who's going to stand up
that's a good point.
On the Canucks? And I agree with him.
That's a great point. Yeah, I agree.
Let's stand behind our guy. This is Roberto Luongo. This is the guy that we have under contract for, what, 8 more years, 9 more years? They need to back him up.
Here's the editorial, and I'll tweet it out so that people can follow it read it on Twitter. Roberto Luongo's on-again, off-again relationship with Canucks fans wasn't helped any Tuesday night by his team's lackluster 4-0 loss to the New York Rangers.
By the way, they
played on Thursday and they won.
Yeah, but if you watch that game, and I watched a portion of that game, they actually controlled the play.
Right.
Okay.
Despite stellar regular season play and his Olympic gold medal, many fans believe the brooding, somewhat joyless Mr. Luongo is incapable of carrying the team to Lord Stanley's promised land.
Many fans, the brooding and what was the second part?
Brooding and somewhat joyless.
I wonder why he's both brooding and somewhat joyless. Would it be those very same fans who have caused that?
Has anybody? I mean, do you consider would those be the two words you use for Roberto Luongo?
No, I think that he's just defensive and almost apoplectic about the treatment he's gotten. I just don't think he knows where to turn.
Richie, you know what? The Vancouver fans better be careful how you know what they do with Roberto Luongo. I'm not I'm not threatening anyone or saying that, you know, telling them what to do. But I mean, you push a guy enough, and he's either going to push back or he's just, you're going to push him too far. And and I think they've already already had that problem with Vancouver.
And by the way, whose fault is it for that contract?
It's not Luongo's fault.
Well, Mike Gillis has done some good things there, but Mike Gillis gave him that big deal. Hey, Mike, you might want to speak up and say, hey, I thought this guy's worth 10 years. I completely misread the market on goaltenders. One of his few mistakes he's made so far. I misread the market on goaltenders. You don't say that, obviously. You come out and say, hey, this is my guy. He's going to be here. And sometimes, you know,
you're right, absolutely.
You don't need to say he's going to necessarily be here, because if you get a great offer, you're going to deal him because of the cap and how much he's making and all that stuff. But you come out and say he's our starting goaltender, you know, take it easy.
And he did try and come to his defense, but it was weak in my.
Not only that, they made him the captain of the team.
Yeah, the loss to the Rangers wasn't Luongo's fault entirely. The forwards lacked finish despite generating 40 shots.
Yeah, 40 shots.
But it was Luongo who was judged the heel, with fans delivering a Bronx cheer when he handled a simple shot after letting in the third of four goals.
I saw that. It was.
You know, it was Patrick Waugh reminiscent of the 10-1 game against Detroit when they gave him the Bronx chair.
No, I wouldn't say that. They weren't on him. Like, he's a savior there, right? It was after the cups, two cups. So this is after the fact. That game was the Bronx chair was similar.
Right.
But, yeah, but Waugh was also, at that point, was out.
Well, it was him and Trombley hated each other.
When he made the save and he put his hands up, he was out.
Yeah, well, he hated...
Luongo's not out, but Luongo's, I mean, yeah.
Patience has clearly run out, especially with backup Corey Schneider appearing to be the better player.
You can't say that.
He doesn't have enough games.
You don't know that.
Many people say the Canucks made a huge mistake in signing Lou to... I love that. They're blasting the guy. He's nothing. He's garbage. He's terrible. I can still call him Lou.
Yeah.
You're a joke. Many people say the Canucks made a huge mistake in signing Lou to a 12-year, $64 million no-trade contract in 2009.
By the way,
because it makes parting with him impossible.
Let me ask you this. I just want to go back to when they signed that contract. I'd love to go back if you could do that, Drew, during the break. See what the Vancouver province had to say on the day they signed the contract.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that they weren't...
Great deal for the team. I'm going to actually find that. Great deal for the team. We really think he can help
the future. A Canuck for life. So here's our solution. This is the best part is the solution. Trade Luongo straight up for Vincent LeCavalier.
Oh, hold on. They got into that?
Of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Wow.
Who has a similar $85 million, 11-year, no-trade deal.
That doesn't make
With
any
Steve
sense.
With Steve Stamkos in Tampa, LeCavalier is no longer top dog and could use a fresh start as much as Lou.
Hold on. So you want to make... Oh, so they want to bring in Vincent LeCavalier to be paid $10 million a year to play third-line center?
Pretty much.
He's not playing ahead of Kessler and Sedin.
Nope.
You're not moving either of those guys to the wing. You're going to move him to be the second-line left winger for $10 million? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love when papers come out and propose random trades. What are they? Just like, holy smokes.
Tampa needs better goaltending. We need a power forward. Lou's wife could finally be closer to her family, and LeCavalier could play hockey again in a city that actually cares about his sport. It's a win-win-win-win. Lou, Vince, Corey fans.
I would say that article is a lose-lose-lose.
I was going to say that.
It's a disgrace. This is a garbage piece of writing is what you're reading here, folks. This is garbage. Stick to the bigger issues, Vancouver province. Vancouver Canucks, defend your player. Oh, let's go to commercial break. I'm getting too riled up. What an absolute garbage piece. It's available on our Twitter page, @IllegalCurve, in case you missed it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back. One final segment. My apologies if I broke anybody's speakers in the last segment, as we've been getting some response on Twitter to that. You can tell I was fired up.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's joined now by our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. Anthony, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, thanks. Gotcha. We'll get you on for a few minutes here before we have to wrap the show. We got the Jets Flyers game coming up Thursday, first of four meetings this year. Flyers off to a decent start, especially with all the roster turnover. But apparently, Peter Laviolette really skated them hard into the ground yesterday at practice. Can you give us any?
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
It was a short practice. It was only 35, 40 minutes. But it wasn't anything out of the norm. felt it was a little bit more intense than most practices are. It was the same drills that he does all the time. There was a little bit of skating drill in there, but it wasn't like a suicide. It wasn't like all the way around the rink nonstop. It was just back and forth, blue line to blue line. It was short and intense. But I think it was just kind of a message like, okay, look, we had a good start, but we had some things that had been a little lackluster. We were still winning games, and now we played the Capitals, and it came back and bit us. So we can't let that happen. You know, here's what I'm going to show you that we need to do differently. And he did it again, like I said, 35, 40 minutes. But I think that the message got through. The players understood it, and they said as much afterwards.
Anthony, Claude Giroux has been very good. How good has he actually been, you know, so far this year, and what's the ceiling for him?
Five goals in six games.
Yep.
He's proving that he can be a top-line center. Playing with Jaromir Jagr, I know Jagr hasn't scored a goal yet for the Flyers, but he's really opened up the ice for Giroux. There was a lot of time last year where, you know, Giroux would start to emerge into his game last year, and teams would figure out a way to try and take him out of the game. But when you have Jagr on the ice, and he's such a great puck possession guy, and he's so hard to knock off the puck, it really changes how you defend that line. And so it really has made Giroux be able to get into spots that he wasn't able to get into last year. And I think that you're seeing him reap the benefits of it. So, while Jagr hasn't scored, he has had an impact on this team, especially on Claude Giroux.
Anthony, you mentioned Jagr. What about Jakub Voracek? How would you rate his game thus far?
Voracek's actually been okay. He started off stronger. His last couple games haven't been great. They need him to shoot the puck with more authority. First, they needed him to shoot the puck more. One of the knocks on him when he was in Columbus was, you know, he was always looking to pass the puck. He wasn't looking to shoot. Well, the Flyers seemed like over through the preseason and into the first couple games, got into his head, shoot the puck more, and he was. But now what he's doing is he's really kind of finessing the puck on net, and you can't do that when you're playing the position that he's playing. He needs to take his shots when he's got open shots and fire them to the net. He can't just kind of push them out of goal. He goes there and make the save more often than not. So the next step in the progression for Voracek is to start taking harder shots, and maybe he'll see he'll get rewarded for it if he keeps taking them that way.
Anthony, a line in Philly that was successful the past number of years was Briere, Hartnell, and Leno. Obviously, Leno's in Buffalo now. What's happened with the falling from grace of Scott Hartnell?
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a second.
Oh, you know, I was talking about the line that's been successful. Well, that was successful for the past couple of years in Briere, Billy Leno, and Scott Hartnell. And I said, obviously, Leno is in Buffalo, but what's happened with Scott Hartnell?
Oh, Hartnell. It's interesting what they've done to Hartnell. You know, he was such a key contributor for the top two lines the first two, or last couple of years, or 3 years for the Flyers. Mm-hmm. And this year he's really been, he's been dropped down to the third line. He's been taken off all special teams. He's only playing like 11 minutes a game. And you get the that he's really pressing to impress the coaches to get back into their good graces, and he's making mistakes. He had a bad turnover on the first Washington goal the other night. He lost coverage on another Washington mm-hmm. goal. He's really frustrated. I honestly believe that the Flyers would like to get rid of Scott Hartnell and his $4.2 million salary. It would get him underneath the cap where they're really up against it. But Hartnell has a no-trade clause, so maybe what the premise is here is, you know, don't make him happy, and maybe he'll say, okay, yeah, send me somewhere else. I can't explain it otherwise. Although they are reuniting him with Briere for the game tonight against St. Louis, so maybe they can jumpstart one or both of them a little bit. But I think ultimately, long-term, if this doesn't work, I think that the Flyers are going to look to move him.
Any chance they'll just dump him into the minors to shed their weight from that contract?
I don't know if they would go that route because they're so up against it as far as contracts. They have 50 contracts right now. And so if you moved him down to the minors just to get the money off the books or off the cap, you still have the problem of if you need to bring somebody in, you need to get rid of contracts in order to bring somebody else in. So I think that ultimately they'd like to move him. I do know that Nashville was interested right before the season began, and they contacted the Flyers about a possibility, but nothing ever came to fruition. I know Hartnell liked it in Nashville when he was there, so maybe that's something that could work out. Nashville's got some room to take on that salary, too. So maybe that's something that the Flyers can revisit if they can convince Hartnell to, you know, go against go and waive his no-trade clause.
Anthony, since the upheaval of the offseason, this has undoubtedly become Chris Pronger's team. He's the leader in the dressing room, and, you know, as the captain, he's the leader on the ice. You know, how is the team responding to his leadership? Is, you know, is a things more hunky-dory now than they were with the Richards-Carter-Pronger trifecta?
Well, it certainly is a more hunky-dory locker room, I can tell you that. You know, it used to be last year, even on a random practice day, you would walk over to the arena and go into the locker room, and you could cut the tension with a knife, whether it was the players and the coach who weren't getting along, or the players and the media who weren't getting along, or players themselves who weren't getting along, and you really felt it when you walked into that room. This year, not at all. I mean, even after the loss, you know, the other day and going into the locker room yesterday, everybody was still lighthearted and you know, really comfortable, you know, people cracking jokes at one another. And you really get the sense that this group likes each other a lot. Now, I know it's only six games into the season. Let's wait and see how they react to one another in February. But for now, I can say, yeah. And I think that has been an effect of Chris Pronger because he is that way. I mean, yeah, he's a tough voice. Yeah, he's outspoken. But at the same time, he does like to have fun a little bit. He does like to keep the locker room loose. And I think that you're seeing that right off the bat. I think it's certainly a cultural change for the better for the Flyers.
Anthony, why isn't anyone talking about Matt Reed, 25-year-old rookie? He's got 6 points, comes out of Bemidji State and played a little bit in the AHL last year. As far as I'm concerned, this should be a bigger story. Don't you agree with that?
Yes, and it's like almost like you read my mind. There will be a story in the near future written by one Anthony Sanfilippo about Matt Reed. He has been a phenomenal story coming out of nowhere. Actually, I did a little research on him from his time in the USHL. He was playing Junior B up in Canada and really wasn't, you know, nobody really knew who he was, and he wasn't even drafted into the USHL. He actually went onto the website for the Des Moines Buccaneers and was looking for a way to get in touch with the coach. Couldn't find anything. The only thing he could find was an email for the trainer.
Oh, wow.
He emailed his information, like a resume almost, to the trainer saying, can you pass this on? And so the trainer passed it on to Coach Reg Simon down there, and Reg said, yeah, let's bring him in and take a look at him. And, you know, they loved him. And he just grew from there, and then he goes and has a nice career at Bemidji State for 4 years, and the Flyers sign him as a free agent. In the offseason, he makes the team. He's on the second line, 6 points. Bob McKenzie's picking him to win the Calder Trophy.
Hey, really?
It's a terrific story. Anthony, we're right up against it. Appreciate it. We'll have to do it. We'll do it longer next time.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem, guys.
Thanks, Anthony. Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times is our final guest here this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Big thank yous today to Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer. A big thank you to Craig Button of TSN. And, of course, a big thank you to Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. The website is www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Hustler and Lawless are coming up next from Tavern United at
TYC, I thought.
Is it TYC?
Yeah,
oh, TYC. Sorry, TY. I don't know what it's called.
True,
TYC.
You should know that. You were there last night.
Yeah, it's true enough. Hustler and Lawless are coming to you for the Bomber pregame show at TYC. Richard Pollock, you're off for 2 hours. You're coming back after that with Dave Manuk of LegalCurve.com. So you're playing double duty here on the station. Puck drop for the Canes-Jets game on Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290 at 6 o'clock. Pretty much just stick with us on TSN 1290 all day today. And you know that if it is Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Good night. Good afternoon, everybody.